It's Wednesday, December 2nd, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, the British Parliament debates bombing the Islamic State in Syria.
The balance of political analysis in the British media is that the motion will be passed, but we can't rule out surprises.
NATO's troop expansion in Afghanistan occurs at a perilous time for the country, and Spotify announces its top musical artists for 2015. It's all ahead. Teams of U.S. special operators could be in place within weeks, aiming to strike at the brain trust and nervous system of the Islamic State terror group in an intensified effort to destroy what many see as a growing global threat. The goal will be to take advantage of intelligence on short notice in order to degrade key leadership and command and control elements of ISIL in both Iraq and Syria. That's according to a U.S. official who spoke to VOA on condition of anonymity. Meanwhile, in London, members of the British Parliament are debating whether to expand airstrikes to IS sites in Syria. Ben Berry is a senior fellow for land warfare at the International Institute for Strategic Studies in London. I spoke with him soon after the parliamentary debate began. Well, at the moment, is this likely to see as being passed by MPs?
Yes, the balance of political analysis in the British media is that the motion will be passed, but we can't rule out surprises, you know, because it is a debate in the House and there is still oratory practiced by parliamentarians on both sides.
Has the recent attacks in Paris really pushed this to the forefront of concern in London?
Yes, I think so. And there have been a number of direct appeals by French politicians, including their defence minister and President Hollande, for Britain to support the stand France has taken on Daesh.
Are there concerns, say, by the Labour Party that the UK, however, could get swept into a larger military operation such as happened in Iraq?
Yes, there are the concerns, but I think the concerns that many Labour politicians have expressed, which have also been expressed by a small minority of Conservative members of Parliament, is they can't see how a Britain contributing to airstrikes over Syria is going to make a military difference, and they can't see a coherent British government strategy that moves the situation in Syria closer to some kind of conclusion and a peace deal. That's fundamentally their objections. It's not so much a specific objection that Britain's going to repeat its role in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And indeed, the government has made it very clear that it doesn't see British boots on the ground.
And what about coordination, certainly when you've got several countries being involved in this? You know, I would think there's a certain amount of concern about how this will eventually be organized.
Well, the British have subordinated all their forces to the US-led coalition, who, of course, are deconflicting their air missions with those of Russia. So I don't see that's a particular problem.
Ben Berry, Senior Fellow for Land Warfare at the International Institute for Strategic Studies in London. Now for reaction on social media, I'm joined by International Edition's Olan Akisholu.
Hi, Sarah. Well, many members of Parliament in the UK are actually very active on Twitter, and a good number of those who have decided to support airstrikes have tweeted out their support. Dan Jarvis, the MP representing Barnsley Central, he tweeted, "I am persuaded the case for action against ISIL in Syria outweighs the case for inaction." But there's also a lot of people being vocal against the airstrikes on social media. Wes Streeting, another MP representing Ilford North, he posted a long message on social media complaining about bullies in Parliament trying to influence other members' votes. And I saw several other MPs proudly tweeting why they oppose airstrikes in Syria. There's actually an online petition on the Parliament's website for a motion against airstrikes. I found a lot of people sharing links to that on Twitter, urging people to add their name. It's been up for 10 days and has around 66,000 signatures, but it needed 100,000 to get considered for a debate in Parliament.
Anything else interesting trending on social media?
Yeah, well, this is a little bit of a lighter trend. It's now December, and there's an emerging trend in the spirit of the holidays. People are tagging social media posts with hashtag Elf on the Shelf. This goes back to a 2005 children's book called The Elf on the Shelf, A Christmas Tradition. It's about little elves sent by Santa Claus to scout around your house and report who's being naughty and nice. And in the book, an elf goes back and forth between the North Pole every day, shows up at a different spot each morning in your family's house. You can actually buy one of these elves, and a lot of people are taking pictures of the elf at different places around their house, doing different funny things and sharing it on social media. So a lot of people are having fun with that.
Yeah, maybe we'll find an elf in the studio someday.
That would be pretty funny.
Okay, thanks a lot, Olin. That's Olin Akisholu. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter says the United States military will deploy a specialized expeditionary force to Iraq to launch unilateral raids and put even more pressure on the terrorist Islamic State group, including in Syria. Carter's remarks came before a congressional hearing Tuesday, during which several lawmakers questioned President Barack Obama's current strategy against ISIS. VOA's Cindy Sain has more from Capitol Hill.
After last month's terrorist attacks in Paris, a number of Republican lawmakers criticized the Obama administration for not doing enough to defeat the Islamic State group. On Tuesday, Defense Secretary Ash Carter told members of the House Armed Services Committee the Pentagon is sending more U.S. forces into the fight.
Next, in full coordination with the government of Iraq, we're deploying a specialized expeditionary targeting force to assist Iraqi and Kurdish Peshmerga forces and put more, even more pressure on ISIL. These special operators will over time be able to conduct raids, free hostages, gather intelligence, and capture ISIL leaders. This force will also be in a position to conduct unilateral operations in Syria.
The Pentagon did not specify how many troops will be sent to Iraq, but said they may be fighting alongside Kurdish forces. At the hearing, most members welcomed the announcement. But Democrat Adam Smith told VOA countries in the region also need to do a lot more.
What we need to do is we need to motivate the people in the region, particularly the Sunnis, to fight against ISIS. If it's a Western force, that just reinforces ISIS's message, draws more recruits to them, and makes it more difficult for us to be successful in defeating ISIS.
Speaking at a climate summit in Paris, President Obama said the coalition of nations would prevail against ISIS and expressed optimism that Russian President Vladimir Putin would eventually get behind a political transition in Syria.
And I think Mr. Putin understands that with Afghanistan fresh in the memory, for him to simply get bogged down in a inconclusive and paralyzing civil conflict is not the outcome that he's looking for.
Several lawmakers said Congress should bring an authorization of military force to the floor to authorize the ongoing operations against ISIS.
Would it help you in this fight to defeat ISIS if the Congress would meet its constitutional responsibility?
Carter said this would help U.S. troops putting their lives on the line to know that by passing such a measure, the Congress and the whole country is behind them. Cindy Sain, VOA News on Capitol Hill.
This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
A pair of scientists from the United Kingdom have found the fossilized remains of one of Earth's first forests in Svalbard, a Norwegian archipelago located between Norway and the North Pole. They also say that primitive forests may be one of the reasons for a significant drop in the levels of atmospheric carbon dioxide nearly 400 million years ago. That huge reduction in the level of CO2 coincided with the growth and spread of these very first forests, whose trees suck the gas from the air to create food and tissue through the process of photosynthesis. Back then, during the Devonian period, Norway was located near the equator. Scientists say that the large drop in atmospheric CO2 was also responsible for an extraordinary reduction in Earth's temperatures to levels that are similar to what we have today. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, Spotify announces its top musical artists of 2015. The Taliban has denounced NATO's decision to extend its mission in Afghanistan by keeping 12,000 troops through 2016 and continuing military financial assistance to the Kabul government through 2020. Ayaz Ghul reports from VOA's South Asia Bureau in Islamabad.
In a statement issued Wednesday, the Islamist insurgency reiterated its resolve to continue the Taliban-led jihad against what it calls the country's occupation until the last foreign soldier leaves Afghanistan. The Islamic Emirate strongly condemns the NATO decision to continue the war in Afghanistan. It will add to problems facing Afghans and further destabilize the region, waste opportunities and discredit the NATO itself, said Taliban spokesman Zabiullah Mujahid. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said Tuesday the alliance will pledge approximately 12,000 troops as part of its Afghan Resolute Support mission. He made the announcement in Brussels after NATO foreign ministers endorsed the decision. Afghan Foreign Minister Salahuddin Rabbani welcomed the extension, saying it will help Afghanistan grow as a stable, prosperous and democratic country.
In spite of many challenges we face, Afghanistan has done much better than expected. As we reach the end of this year, of this decisive year, we can say with great confidence that our common enemy has been psychologically defeated.
Other than the brief fall of the northern city of Kunduz to the Taliban in September, Rabbani said Afghan national security forces have successfully defended the rest of the country without any direct international support during this fighting season. The United States and its allies invaded Afghanistan in 2001 after the September 11 Al-Qaeda plotted terrorist attacks to punish the Taliban for sheltering the terrorist network on its soil. NATO took over command of the counterterrorism operation in 2003 but ended the combat mission last year, leaving around 13,000 troops in Afghanistan to train and advise local security forces. But the drawdown of foreign forces has emboldened the resurgent Taliban, which have inflicted heavy casualties on Afghan forces and have made territorial gains in remote areas. The insurgent advances prompted the United States in mid-October to slow down its own military withdrawal. Foreign Minister Rabbani said that Kabul is open to peace and reconciliation talks with Taliban members who are willing to negotiate, recognize the Afghan constitution, and renounce ties with terrorist groups. He particularly underscored the need for sincere commitment and support from neighboring Pakistan for the peace process to succeed.
The recent meeting that took place in Paris between the leaders of the two countries, we hope that as a result of this and the upcoming conference, as you know, the Heart of Asia on December 9th, will be an opportunity to discuss that. Without support of Pakistan, it would be difficult that we would make any progress in the peace and reconciliation process.
Afghan President Ashraf Ghani held talks with Pakistani Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif earlier this week on the sidelines of the UN Climate Change Conference in Paris, breaking months of deadlock in bilateral ties. The two leaders agreed to renew efforts to seek a negotiated settlement to the Afghan war. Leaders in Afghanistan allege that the Taliban insurgency is directed, equipped, and trained in Pakistan, charges Islamabad rejects. Speaking on French television after talks with Sharif, the Afghan president said he was considering an invitation to attend next week's Heart of Asia conference in Pakistan, where regional countries discuss efforts to promote political and economic stability in Afghanistan. It is not known whether Ghani formally asked Sharif to facilitate talks with the Taliban. When asked whether he will trust another Islamabad-mediated peace process, the Afghan president said, "Pakistan can be a broker. The trust needs to be earned." Ayaz Ghul for VOA News, Islamabad.
The U.S. Federal Aviation Administration has downgraded Thailand's safety ratings, a move in line with other international audits. Ron Corbin reports for VOA from Bangkok. The move has implications for the country's important tourism industry.
Thai Prime Minister Prayut Chan-o-cha Wednesday moved quickly to press Thai aviation officials to overcome safety concerns and standards after the US Federal Aviation Administration's downgrade of the country's safety ratings. The US decision follows that of the International Civil Aviation Organization's ICAO concerns over aviation safety in a report in March. The FAA lowered Thailand's rating to a Category 2, that its civil aviation authority was deficient in one or more critical areas, or that the country was lacking legal or regulatory oversight of airlines in keeping with international standards. The move blocks airlines from expanding routes to the United States. Brendan Sopi, the Singapore-based chief analyst with the Centre for Aviation, said the US decision echoes concerns voiced by others.
They've already have had this issue for the last several months with ICAO. So, I mean, this is, and then the restrictions imposed by Japan and Korea, which has had a real impact on the startups, Nok Scoot and Thai AirAsia X in particular, as well as some other charter carriers in Thailand.
South Korea, Japan, and China had earlier stopped Thai-based airlines from flying charters and new routes after the United Nations ICAO report over safety concerns. Some restrictions are reported to have been eased. While Thailand's national carrier, Thai Airways International, said the FAA decision would have no immediate impact, analysts say there are concerns about its broader effect on Thailand's critical tourism industry. In an interview with VOA earlier this year, Thai Airways President Charampon Jatikastera said because the airline no longer flies directly to the United States, he is more concerned with the assessment by European aviation authorities. A critical report by the European authorities would affect Thai flights to all European destinations. The European Aviation Safety Agency's results of its audit are due on December 15. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
This is VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. That's Encounter every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. The music streaming service Spotify announced its end-of-the-year list for top artists of 2015. International Edition's David Byrd tells us who made the list and who leads the all-time standings.
You used to call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love. Call me on my cell phone. Late night when you need my love.
Spotify users were grooving to Drake's Hotline Bling and other tunes from the rapper in 2015. He had 1.8 billion plays from 46 million listeners, making him the most streamed artist globally on Spotify. Last year's winner, Ed Sheeran, finished second. The Weeknd, Maroon 5, and Kanye West rounded out the top five. Rihanna topped the list for the year's most streamed female performer with 1 billion plays. She topped a pretty impressive list that included Ariana Grande, Nicki Minaj, Beyonce, and Ellie Goulding.
Here we go.
Lean On, a collaboration between Mo, DJ Snake, and Major Lazer, earned the most streamed song honors for 2015 with 540 million plays. Lean On finished ahead of Omi's Cheerleader, Uptown Funk from Mark Ronson and Bruno Mars, See You Again from Wiz Khalifa and Charlie Puth, and Ellie Goulding's Love Me Like You Do. The Weeknd's album Beauty Behind the Madness was the most streamed album of the year, beating out Drake's If You're Reading This, It's Too Late, and Major Lazer's Peace Is the Mission. Here in the United States, Drake was the most streamed artist, and his album If You're Reading This, It's Too Late was also the top of the list, Nicki Minaj topped the list for most streamed female artist in the USA, followed by Beyoncé, Rihanna, Ariana Grande, and Lana Del Rey. Fetty Wap's Trap Queen was the most streamed track in America. What do you mean? Justin Bieber earned the distinction of the most plays in a single day with 36 million streams on November 13th when his album Purpose was released. Ed Sheeran is the top streamed artist of all time with more than 3 billion streams and 59 million listeners. Overall, Spotify said that 75 million listeners streamed 20 billion hours of music in 2015. The company also has more than 20 million customers paying $9.99 a month for ad-free listening. That makes Spotify the most popular paid streaming service in the world. And that's without Taylor Swift's 1989 and Adele's Hello. I'm David Byrd in Washington.
That's our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks very much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Pakistani farmers are gaining access to global markets with some assistance from the United States. The U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, held a ceremony recently showcasing a successful agricultural program that shared modern techniques with 27,000 farmers and helped to increase agricultural exports by $34 million. USAID's agribusiness project worked with both small farmers and larger producers to increase productivity and quality while reaching new domestic and international markets. The four-year program, which just ended, created jobs for 14,000 Pakistanis. The farmers of Pakistan have tremendous potential, and USAID is committed to supporting farmers in adopting modern best practices and technologies, said USAID Mission Director John Groark. Some of the program's achievements include a 300% increase in income for 800 women who process apricots in Gilgit-Baltistan, an improvement in the quality of chilies from Pakistan, and improvements in cuts of meat for the international export market. USAID is continuing to support market-led growth in the horticulture and livestock value chains through a recently launched U.S.-Pakistan Partnership for Agricultural Market Development. U.S. assistance has reached more than 800,000 rural households and financed irrigation initiatives for more than 480,000 acres of farmland in Pakistan. The United States helps Pakistani agribusinesses access financing, form partnerships, and tap into more lucrative markets with the goal of linking thousands of local producers nationwide to major commercial firms by the end of 2016. More than 26,000 new jobs can be attributed to USAID programming in the last 4 years. Through USAID efforts, the incremental sales for Pakistani businesses in the past 5 years have increased by more than $144 million. And the revenue generated by the exports for the targeted commodities, a large part of which is agricultural produce, has increased by $57 million. The United States is proud to work with its partners in Pakistan to help Pakistan's agriculture fully realize its tremendous potential.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.